Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening. Welcome to episode 30 of the AI Comic Pod. We are a year old. Party time. We have made it. I don't know how we've made it, but we have made it through all the trials and tribulations to our 30th pod. And we've come back really where we started. So if anyone was listening a year ago, we did a two kind of headed pod on Avengers. Avengers 1, Avengers 2. It was a huge pod. We talked and talked and talked and had loads of fun and a really good laugh. And we've kind of come back to where we started. So this pod, we're discussing Marvel and we're discussing all 14 films from 2008 all the way to 2016. Yeah, you might be here a while, but, you know, bear with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. To join me and Stu on this pod, It's the Podfather himself, the man that joined us originally. It's Gag Standen. How are you doing, mate?
Congratulations, boys. Fantastic. Your baby's won.
Oh, thank you very much. We're so proud. He's like bumbling around and bouncing off door frames now. I think that's what one-year-olds do.
Yeah, just about.
It's nearly walking. It's running. It's running now.
Yeah, it skipped the walking phase, you know, not much crawling. It's just gone straight to running around like a headless chicken.
I actually did that, hoping. You know. I seriously didn't walk when I was a baby. My mum and dad told me that as soon as I could stand on my two feet, I was running around.
And hitting your head often, perhaps?
Well, obviously, that's why I am the way I am.
he banged his head once too many times.
Oh, God, yeah. Decades of head trauma.
Jesus.
To fill everyone in, if they don't know our kind of origins and how this kind of came to pass. So I'd done a few movie night podcasts, the wonderful AI Movie Night with Joe Simpson. My first ever pod was doing Shawshank, which was probably, I don't know, 16 months ago or something like that. And then Nina asked me to come on her show, and then I did various other means. But after doing a few of those, I got asked, well, Joe asked me which pod I wanted to do. I asked to do The Dark Knight, and he said, have you got anyone you think would be great to come on? And I said, Stuart Bridson.
How did you meet Stu?
Twitter solely. Oh. We've only met in person once, I believe.
Yeah.
So we know each other. Obviously, we speak really regularly. We're really good mates, and I think that's what an advocate for what Twitter can do, because, you know, AI is huge for, you know, people knowing each other from all over the world and speaking to other people, and we've built this kind of little comic global community for ourselves, which we're really proud of, and South Africans, Americans, you know, Wolverhamptons, Manchesterites, and all the rest of it. So it's a good kind of whatever. You're from Salford, Liverpool. God knows where you're from. Your accent, we can't even tell these days.
I'm from Skem. I'm a proud Wolf.
And yeah, we built this kind of community. And the reason it came to pass is we did the Dark Knight pod. We absolutely loved it. And I kind of messaged Stu saying, do you fancy doing that again? And then we approached Gags and said, I think this will be a good idea. And we got it all kind of going pretty quickly, really.
This was all in the space of 24 hours. It was literally the morning after the pod. That was really good fun. What do you reckon about making this a permanent thing? Yeah, go ahead. That sounds good. A couple of hours later, well, I spoke to Gags and he said it's fine. And then the day after that, we had a name and a logo.
Oh, God, the
so
logo.
It snowballed.
Wasn't there a story about the logo as well?
The logo relates to my little boy's bedroom. He's got his name on like different characters' letters. So I think the O is it's Jacob. So the J is like Spider-Man's face, and the O is like Iron Man's mask and stuff like that. And so we kind of, pitched that, took a photo of that, and you sent it across to your wonderful graphic designer, and he came back, the art department. Yeah, it's incredible. So yeah, that came that way. We had one slight hiccup early doors, which is quite humorous, because you sent us a message one morning, Gags, and it said, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be able to call it the comic pod, because we didn't have the AI at the beginning, because there already is a comic pod in Brazil, is it? Or Argentina,
Portugal.
Or Mexico?
It was Brazil. No, it was Brazil.
Yeah, so they speak Portuguese. So, it's in Brazil, which they claim being hugely popular. It might be in Brazil, I don't know. But they basically said you can't call it this, and threatened legal action. Yeah.
Comics pod, comics hyphen pod.
Is that what they
comic cast? They said do these. I was like, no.
Yeah, they suggested really shit names, because they were scared of a bit of healthy rivalry, it would seem. But they ultimately, after a bit of Gag's persuasion, settled for us to do the AI comic pod. And, in truth, we've never really looked back. I mean, we've covered a lot of subjects in a year. 30 pods, this will be strong. DC, Marvel, we're going to do individual comic reviews. We've done some slightly deeper topics, and we do really appreciate it. I mean, me and Stu say it all the time, and we are extremely grateful for anyone that chooses to listen. And we know we've got some really good, strong listeners who listen every week and tweet us all the time. And, I think our listener base is the constant
on the channel. This is the constant pod. This is the pod that will always be there every month. You'll get two or three of them, maybe four sometimes, and basically it's always going to do solid numbers. It's the constant, the one that always delivers. That's what the AI comic pod is for AI, so it's the staple on the channel now. That's what it
is. And who would have thought me and Stu would be staples of anything, HG? That's quite a rare.
I'm still not convinced by it, to be honest. Let's not get bogged down with expectation, because if we do, it'll just go to our heads and we'll just do something stupid like declare ourselves to be bigger than Jesus.
You already do that anyway.
I have never once claimed to be bigger than Jesus.
Bigger in what way?
Well. That's not really for me to say.
Small hand stew, it's fine.
Small hand stew,
Oh, with this hand, I bet it's going to feel huge. Somehow everything comes back to Deadpool and wanking.
That's essentially our pod in a short summary. If you've not listened before, it's essentially stew making masturbation jokes, in the guise of Deadpool. So
I like swearing.
Yeah, we like swearing. We like having a good laugh, I think that's, you got to take some face value. We occasionally go slightly deeper. I think if you listen to our pod on Luke Cage, there's some racial debate in there, which is quite highbrow for us. We've talked, women in comics, and if you read any of the excellent articles that Joseph Connors produces for the kind of geek section on the AI site, he touches on some really kind of heavy subjects in relation to kind of the comic genre. So yeah, there's some serious stuff in and amongst us generally having a laugh and having a good time. So why we're here tonight, Marvel's huge for all three of us. We're all very self-proclaimed Marvel fanboys. So we thought we'd discuss them at length and then produce an article kind of to go with it. And we've all ranked our favourite Marvel films from 1 down to 14. And we're kind of just going to give a little bit of time to the ones we really love and maybe gloss over the ones that we don't love so much. The Incredible Hulk must be the one said, to be fair, but there's some others in there as well. So 2008, Iron Man was released. It's the first of Phase 1. It's the beginning of everything that's come since. And it's a huge film, and it's one that we all kind of hold quite dearly. I ranked it out of my 14 in sixth place, to just outside the top five. But it's so difficult with these films because I love it. And for a period of time, it was in my top three, it was in my top five, and then another film comes along and it kind of slowly works its way down the list. For me, it still has barely aged. It stands alone in terms of the action, and the CGI is excellent, and obviously the casting of Downey Jr. is just genius in cinema. Stu, where does it rank for you, mate?
For me, I had it a little bit lower than you. I had it in eighth, but exactly the same sort of rationale as you. It starts off in one position and then it just goes down one by one. But I think that's a testament to the MCU as a whole, that every time a new film comes out, they are consistently getting better. You could say out of the 14, there's generally been an upwards trend. And it's not a case of, you know, out of a list of 14, the film that's in eighth and ninth, they're not bad films. There's just the ones that have come after them have just been a little bit better or a little bit more to our tastes. But as you say, almost faultless film. I can't really think of anything that's wrong with it. It looks great. It watches great. It hasn't aged. And it doesn't feel like it was out that long ago. It really doesn't feel like it was 2008.
Yeah, exactly. You're pushing a decade old and it doesn't feel. And that's the thing about Jon Favreau. I think his reason for his inclusion, other than him, you know, being a good actor and director, is his use with CGI, because he's known for it. And I think if you've seen Jungle Book this year, which is all CGI, he produced that.
And
his work with it,
back.
It's just amazing.
He's coming back in, apparently, Spider-Man Homecoming. Happy is back.
Nice.
But Jon Favreau is loosely attached to Iron Man 4 if Marvel decide that there's enough money to be made from a fourth solo Iron Man film. But
I think anyone that's listened to Pods with Gags before will know how big an Iron Man fan he is. I mean, we've had full-blown arguments almost on the Iron
Man. He's got a suit. He told me once
Captain
he's made
America.
An Iron Man suit, but he's made it out of tin foil, so it's more like Tin Man. He's coloured it in with Sharpies and everything. That's true.
Do you want me to,
AI Comic Pod exclusive.
Do you want me to tell you where this fits?
Go on.
Go on.
Okay, so basically the Iron Man suit nearly has around 450 pieces to it, by the way. Just a little fun fact for you. But
nice,
anyway, so
nice.
It's third for me. And you know what? A lot of you are probably going to be really, really shocked. Like, what the fuck, Gags? But I have it at three, probably because of emotional reasons as well. Like, I'm a cinematic fan from the start. I've never been in the comics. Nothing. I've got a load of comics now for the girls. But I never knew who Iron Man was. Like, before the adverts came on TV and stuff, I was like, what the hell is this? And it actually didn't even look that good to me when I was watching the adverts. I just thought, you know what, I'm going to watch this. Dad was like, come on, let's do. Little one was like, Dad, I don't mind watching this. Let's go. So first time ever, the three of us went to watch a movie together. Because normally, she was little then, so she would only watch like, you know, she would only watch
kid shit.
Yeah, kid stuff. So, but I won't lie, this one blew me away. I thought Robert Downey Jr. played the cocky, witty, annoying, rich bloke. Like, I mean, you just fell in love with it. And I never knew who Iron Man was. And I was just blown away by the story of it. The start was great. Like, how he was kidnapped and everything. And I just think that if this film had flopped, none of it would have happened. None of it. If he wasn't casted, I don't think it would have been as good as it got to. I'm not saying that's because the rest is better than anyone. I'm just saying he was the first one casted, so it became like an attraction for everyone. Like, he's in this and he's nailed it, and look at the money it's made. Yeah, let's get involved. And I just think
he was the Rolling Stone, wasn't he? Like you say, he was he sort of got it going. I actually think you're right. I think the MCU to date would look a little bit different if this had come out and bombed because people just weren't in the comic frame of mind. It would have been very difficult, because then you'd be looking at the next film would have to be the one to kickstart it. But then the expectation's even greater. Look at DC. Every time you have a film that bombs, the expectation on the next film is 10 times greater. And then it's got to be an even bigger success.
And the scrutiny is 10 times worse as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, we haven't really talked all the films to DC this year, but you can feel the pressure on them. And I think Marvel will always put pressure on their directors, on their producers to absolutely nail it and get it right. But they're more relaxed, you know, they're more comfortable in their skin. And it's the same with the actors they've got on board. And they've taken risks with directors as well. Do you know what I mean? Some of the directors they've got involved. And Jon Favreau wasn't a guy who'd done big action films before. Do you know what I mean? It's quite bold to bring in these kind of actors. And I think people forget where Downey Jr. was at that stage in his career.
But he was dead and buried, wasn't he? He was on the scrap.
Kind of. Yeah, because of all his drug abuse and all his problems and alcoholism and everything else.
And he was out of it for a long time. He had a long spell where the only time you ever saw him was in the gossip columns and in those trashy rag magazines that you get in America, like the National Enquirer, when he's been caught and he's been arrested and he's got his orange jumpsuit on because he's been arrested. And, you know, he imagine them doing that. I can't even liken it to someone, but imagine the same thing happening now. It just doesn't seem like a logical thing. You can imagine that when they got round the table and they talked about this, they went, what, Robert Downey Jr., you want to put him as the face of a brand new chapter in cinema? Right, okay. And there must have been a few sort of head scratches going, the fuck have they been drinking? And
It's strange to say it, and we'll come to it later with a couple of the other films, but the leads in Ant-Man and Guardians are very much the same. It's very much a director pushing what he feels will work and them taking a bit of a risk. And actually, look, for Marvel, it's always paid off, you know, because they've made the calculated risks work. And if it was a gamble, it was a smart one anyway. I think there's more Iron Man to come. Obviously, there's sequels. So,
Fun fact for you before you go to Hulk.
Go.
Hugh Jackman was offered Iron Man, and Hugh Jackman offered Hulk. What the fuck?
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Madness.
Hulk. I called it the black sheep of the family.
I can't believe this was after it. I thought it was before Iron Man.
I know. That's
Everyone
what surprises
does.
Me.
Everyone thinks that Hulk was first.
Yeah, because you would have thought, given it was the same year, released in 2008, but it was the second film of the year.
And a lot of people get confused with the other one, don't we? The awful, awful one that starred Eric Banner. That's the real. I mean, that wasn't even the black sheep. That was like a big steaming sheep shit. Just wasn't even worth the.
No.
Real that it was printed on.
I think for me with this film, it was never really going to... It didn't really fit in the MCU. And I don't think Edward Norton's as good an actor as he is on the kind of really dark, edgy roles. I don't think he was really right for the role. You've seen it with Ruffalo's portrayal. He's just much more comfortable in that part, I think. And it's just... It's always been confusing over Hulk and why they've not made a solo film, but a lot of it's licensing issues with Universal, and it still kind of keeps rearing its head a little bit. But I think his role is going to be quite big in Ragnarok, and maybe they'll go on from there or not. You know, maybe
That's why they're doing it with Ragnarok. Kevin Feige has said they wanted to give Mark Ruffalo an origin story or a solo film, probably not.
Origins. You can't retell that again. Yeah.
No, because it's everyone knows that. Everyone
it's like
knows
Superman,
that story.
Isn't it? We taught that.
Yeah. It's like Superman, Batman, Spider-Man. Everyone knows what happened to create the Hulk. But they've said because of the licensing, it's just really, really difficult. Because imagine the negotiations it took for them to do Spider-Man. That would probably be even more complicated for Hulk because it would be the third go at getting it right. So
I don't think people are interested. I think they want to see something new. Why is Hulk so popular from the Avengers? Because you've never seen him with other superheroes like this, you know, and yeah. the interaction and how amazing it is when he fights Thor or Iron Man, you know, or the Hulkbuster. They're just iconic scenes from the Marvel Universe, you know, the MCU. Those are the ones that stick with me because they made me laugh.
They've said they're basically giving him his new solo film broken up over a period of other films, and he's going to be one of the major players in, as you've said, in Ragnarok, and that's essentially going to be like his time in the spotlight.
It's that's smart in a lot of ways because we'll talk about the Thor films, but they've not been particularly popular. Not that they haven't done well at the box office, but they're not the, you know, if you look at the Captain America, Iron Man and Thor trilogies, that one is very much in last. So if you're bringing in a big character like Hulk and giving Ruffalo some more screen time, then I think it can only be a good thing, personally. But
and it's
if you
too
can't
late
tell,
in the day. When we're in phase four,
it's
too late in the day to be giving Hulk, who by this point has been in half a dozen things. You can't just go back and retcon all of that. It's stupid.
It's got to be something new.
And it would be a waste of time and effort when they've got new characters and new IPs coming in. They need to put their emphasis on making sure that Black Panther, Spider-Man, Captain Marvel are all properly introduced and integrated into the MCU. And the Hulk will just be there for as long as it takes.
Give Winter Soldier one. Give Black Widow one. Those would be interesting.
They're far worth the time.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and they're going to be built up more. You know. You guys have always said Winter Soldier is going to become huge later on. So, well, maybe he takes over.
Well, we hope.
Maybe he takes on the Captain America movies. You know, that's what happens.
We will see. So we all scored it last. It's last.
I think everyone was
by a country mile.
We don't need to say any more about
it. Doesn't count. Exactly. 2010, so a couple of year hiatus, which you do not get with Marvel films these days.
Not anymore.
So we had Iron Man 2. I put it as 12. I said it was a slightly disappointing sequel. Villain was off for me. I wasn't feeling the villain. But, you know, Romanov was a slightly softened the blow in the film because her introduction is obviously Scarlett Johansson, and there's not much more to say than that for me.
I had it at 10th. So I had it above the
quite
Thor,
solid.
Yeah, yeah. The Thor movies and above 3. You guys liked Iron Man 3. I thought it was better than that just because I actually liked the villain. I thought he was good. I like him as an actor, to be honest.
He's a great actor. I just didn't quite get it.
He's another one who was on the scrap heap, wasn't he?
Mickey Rourke's been
dead and buried.
Exactly. I just thought I liked it. I liked the other villain in it as well. You know, what was his name? The rich guy that was always trying to outdo.
Oh, Justin Hammer.
Yeah, I thought he was so funny. I just thought he was a really good character. Like someone
he was
good. You want to punch him in the face?
Remind me of his name, Rory.
Is that Guy Pearce in the third?
No, that's the third one. Is it Sam Rockwell? Yeah.
Sam Rodwell, yeah, Rockwell.
Yeah, I love Sam Rockwell as an actor. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he was really good, so I enjoyed him. And then, like you said, this was the movie where Black Widow or Natasha Romanoff, you get that scene at the end when she's kicking everyone's ass, and it looked so much like the Liverpool kit at the time that someone put Standard Chartered across the front of it. And can you remember it? Because it was the pinstripe one.
Yeah, I remember.
And it always has that reminder for me as well. But she was fucking hot. I have to just rate it a little bit higher because of her. She, you know, an introduction, and obviously she's become one of my faves going on. Like, look at her now, like in Civil War. Wow. Her action scenes were phenomenal at the start of that movie. So I just thought from where it gave birth to something as well for me, that movie. So yeah, a little bit higher, still 10th, not that high, but still higher than the Thors.
Yeah,
I've actually got Iron Man 2 in 12th.
We're quite similar on a lot of this, actually.
A lot of these we were, and my major flaw was, and I did say this in the article, my major problem with it was the villain. It wasn't a real villain. It was an amalgamation of two. They put Crimson Dynamo and Whiplash together and came out with a really half-assed villain, and I would rather they just did Whiplash or Crimson Dynamo. It was good that they introduced Black Widow. That was great. As Gag said, she's become one of the major players now, you know, despite the fact that she is arguably joint weakest on the team with Hawkeye because they've got no real discernible powers. They are, you know, she's no less, you know, important than any other member of the team. And not even having the War Machine armor could salvage that film. And the War Machine armor was genuine, full on erection territory. And even that would be. Don't pretend that when you first saw the War Machine armor, you weren't pitching a trouser tent. You know you were.
Mate, that scene was fantastic. The bit where they're having a fight with the...
I love that scene.
It's a brilliant scene. Like, he's having a party, he's losing his mind, you know. It was just class. It was just...
And yet, still 12th.
Yes, I know.
I know. But there's a lot of good to choose, you know.
There is so much coming up.
And that's the point, you know. So moving on, skipping on to just a year later, we have the first Thor movie. Interestingly, we're quite even on this again, to be honest. So I ranked it at 11th. I think we'll all agree that Chris Hemsworth again is just incredible casting as the lead. I think
even though his eyebrows were a bit weird in this one, it looked like he dyed his beard and his eyebrows, and he looked really
stupid. It did look a bit weird. But I mean, the guy's in obviously incredible shape for the film, and he really does look the part, and he does deliver a really good kind of dry line in the film, you know, good sense of humour. I think his connection with Natalie Portman, who you guys seemingly hate.
She's on the major list.
It's the major problem in the film. I think they just don't have a connection at all. And she just seems out of place in this film. And she's never really seemed connected in the Thor kind of, it doesn't work. That's the major issue with the film for me. And that's the problem. You need to like your lead characters, and she was one of them, and nobody liked her, you know?
Well, yeah, you look at the Spider-Man franchise, one of the major pluses that everyone says is that the chemistry between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, obviously they were a real-life couple, but you put two people together with chemistry and everything around that comes together.
Yeah, and Emma Stone's great as well.
When you've got somebody whose delivery is so wooden and so devoid of emotion, I mean, Chris Hemsworth could have put in, you know, the most Oscar-worthy performance of his career, and the film, relatively speaking, still would have been a bit of a stinker because she just saps all of the energy out of almost every scene she's in. You've got Thingy Skarsgård, the guy that plays Dr. Selvig.
Yeah, hilarious. He's great.
Brilliant comedy timing. You've got little bits of Kat Dennings. Absolutely hilarious.
I love Kat Dennings as well.
She's fucking brilliant. And then you've got Natalie Portman. Awful. Just bone dry and just terrible. And I love Thor as a character. And it's such a shame that they weren't able to sort of imbue the same kind of energy into the Thor films as they have with Iron Man and with Captain America. Just think, if they'd been able to get Thor 1 as good as they got Iron Man 1 and Captain America 1, it really, really would have been a whole other level.
Yeah, it would have been. For me, this film started they wanted to start adding big names to it. For example, Natalie Portman. Even though we don't rate her, she's a big name, right? And then Anthony Hopkins as well, to add a bit of...
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, like, you're adding a bit of oomph.
Like, genuine super, super, superstar.
But then introducing, like, Chris Hemsworth, I mean, he had been around, but that makes him... And then Tom Hiddleston. What a fucking find.
Hiddleston. And we'll obviously talk about Avengers for Hiddleston for me, but he's just genius casting in anything now. I mean, if you watch, he's just golden in absolutely anything he's in. He's not that young an actor. He's just so cool. I mean, the guy he's just such an effortlessly cool character, and his delivery, he just steals every scene. I just think he's genius casting in this.
Now, 5 years later, he is still regarded as the best Marvel villain they've done, and right up there, he's held up there with Darth Vader in terms of genuine legendary film villains. He's sitting right on the top shelf with, you know, some of the names that have been around for decades. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but he's not that good, but he's good. He's good.
He's pretty close. Yeah, that's quite high on Vader. Vader versus Gags isn't going to come off, Stu. No. You're never going to get no. You're never going to get Gags to agree to anyone.
You know
versus
what?
Vader.
But he was really good. And you know what? There's more to come. That's the thing. It's not over with him. And I love that they haven't killed him off or anything yet because he needs to be in these in a Thor film.
Yeah,
if Loki's
disappointed
not in it,
when he's not around. Yeah.
If he's not in a Thor film, there's no point going to watch it. Really, I'm that disinterested by that franchise of movies. Like this, like they're talking about Odin again, aren't they? As well, so that's nice because you know he's going to be alive as well. So that's nice to see. But like I said, these ones, I put it in at 12th, but there were positives out of it. There were starts from it again, and we'll see that going forward, like Michael Douglas and stuff like that coming in. You know, people with real legendary status in Hollywood putting their names against Marvel, and
which is just
mad.
Again, it's superhero film, do you know what I mean? It's crazy in grand scheme of things. You said that someone, you know, when the early Spider-Mans were around or any of that kind of stuff, no real actors of merit would have touched it unless they were getting a monstrous paycheck, do you know what I mean? Whereas these films, no doubt they're getting paid well, but you attract these kind of names that are just, and directors as well, and producers and everyone involved of such a high caliber. It's
and people are doing it for bit parts, aren't they? You know, people just want to be in the franchise. This is a bit of an odd one. I don't want to save it until later because it's in my head and I'll forget. Nathan Fillion was actually in Guardians of the Galaxy. Nathan Fillion is a well-known sci-fi and comic buff. He loves this shit.
He was in... Was he Angel in Buffy from years gone by? Was that guy?
No, that was David Boreanaz. David Boreanaz. He was the lead from Firefly.
Oh, Crisis in Serenity, obviously, which is Firefly spin-off, which is a great sci-fi film.
Nathan Fillion was one of the aliens, like a giant amorphous blob in Guardians of the Galaxy. So you don't know it's him unless you listen to the voice, but he just wanted to be in it. Like Daniel Craig being in The Force Awakens, never takes off his helmet. He just wants to be in the film. And that's the pull that these films have got now. People just want to be associated with them to be part of that family.
They're happy to be Easter eggs. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I know, it's mad, isn't it? It's mad.
Madness.
It's absolutely mad. Moving forward, another film in 2011, so there's two that year. Captain America, First Avenger. I scored it in 9.
We all did.
I wanted to score it higher. I was so desperate to score this film higher, but I can't because the sequels are better. But the big thing for me is if the first one is so good, it sets up those to come. Do you know what I mean? I think the first one is the perfect kind of origin story. And again, we've got another character who is perfectly portrayed as the lead character. And we've got his relationship with Bucky. And the casting is probably on a smaller scale here, you know, and I think it feels a little bit the smaller scale. It's obviously that whole World War II vibe, and it doesn't have that big kind of amounts of CGI as much, you know.
I spoke to Nina about this, and I spoke to her about this list, and she actually said that this would have been close to her top one or two because of the World War, you know, like the costume aspect of it all. You know, and like some people will always look at this and go, it was the first one as well. Like I think that kind of started linking things together. Where Iron Man's, you know, Tony Stark's dad's in it and stuff, and you know, you see glimpses of him in Iron Man. That was the first one for me, the movie. So you start getting things of how all of it's going to fit together, and I think this was one of the ones that started doing that more, which was nice because that's where it starts getting interesting, right? When everything you try to piece things together bit by bit, how do they all link up and what's going to happen? So I thought it did quite a lot. It did a very good job of that as well.
Yeah, it did. And I think that the big thing with this is it's kind of the start of the kind of camaraderie between the characters, because the other films have obviously got key relationships and things that have gone before, but this is the first one to me where you get that real sense of like friendship, and it builds on that obviously with Steve and Bucky's kind of relationship. And I mean, Stu, that's a big thing for you. I know you always talk about this when we talk about Captain America.
Yeah, absolutely. It sets up, Like Gag said, it sets up a lot of things and it starts pulling things together, obviously with the historical element, because it is set primarily in, what, the 40s, and then it skips forward to the future. But it introduces Bucky, who we then don't see for a long time, relatively speaking, and then he comes back. And it also introduces Peggy. You know, Peggy Carter, who then goes off and gets two series of her own TV show. Nobody saw that coming. It really gave us Howard Stark. Again, he was a mainstay in Agent Carter. It's an underrated film.
It is.
It's a very underrated film. It's a great origin. I love the fact that the New York scenes were filmed in Manchester and Liverpool. The bit where he chases after the bad guy and he goes into the Hydra sub, that was filmed on the Albert Docks. And all the stuff where he's running around the streets, that was filmed on some of the back streets in Manchester off Great Ancoats Street. And at the time, I lived just off Great Ancoats. And I wanted to go down there on the days they were filming, but I couldn't because I was working nights. And I just love the fact that they got more of a New York vibe from England than they did from, oh, I don't know, funny New York. Story,
my brother-in-law, from Manchester, proper Manx.
Yeah.
I was in Deansgate with him once, and he looked around and he went to me, "Gags, doesn't it remind you of New York?" I was like, "Shut the fuck up." And Nina does that as well. It's like New York. Shut the fuck up.
You couldn't say that to Carlos Tevez. He wouldn't find a great place in the whole house. There's not even one good restaurant, he says.
But proof in the pudding, as Stu just gave a wicked fact about it, they actually shot it to look like New York. So maybe my brother-in-law and Nina were onto something.
In fairness, they do use a lot of Manchester buildings and for a lot of filming. They use the Town Hall, which is where I got married in Manchester. I think Sherlock was used in that, which is a Downey Jr. And then various other things. They use it like Houses of Parliament, but then they used other things. You know, Manchester's a cool city. There's a lot of good things going on. Other than the football.
And then we get to the big one, 2012.
The huge one, the game-changing film, the game-changing film in any Marvel history, in any comic book kind of genre, it's the Avengers.
And oh, man.
Do you know what, Stu? I'm quite annoyed at this. I read this the
Let's
other
kill
day.
Him. Let's
and,
kill him.
And I went, "You fucking what?" I almost on the train shouted out loud. Because I was so angry.
Seventh, Stu, explain yourself.
I went for seventh. I can happily explain it. As good as it was, I've enjoyed six films that have come after it far, far more. They've resonated with me. I actually think, and this is another one that's really unpopular, I think that Age of Ultron has aged better than the Avengers.
That was the other reason that made me shout at you while in
I think the Avengers looks a little bit dated with the way it's shot. It's got some fantastic pieces in it. It was a great culmination of 4 years' work. It pulled together all the characters brilliantly, but I still put it seventh. And it's gradually, it slipped down. It used to be second after Winter Soldier, and then it's gradually gone down and down and down. And when I rewatched it again last year, it did feel like it was a slightly older film, and I don't know why.
But that's not to say
I don't enjoy it.
I've stuck to second, right? And I've stuck to second because, again, what it did at the time, to do that, I don't think anyone's ever done what it achieved. It achieved a lot in one movie.
It did.
Ensemble cast like that was built over 4 years, it can bomb. It can really bomb because one person can take over, like Tony Stark, for example. But everybody came out shining. You know, Hulk, Jeremy Renner even was good in it, you know, like, because he went a bit evil.
even though Hawkeye's a little bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And all of them had plenty of screen time. You wouldn't actually come out and say, "I was disappointed that this guy wasn't in it much." And, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, Coulson was pivotal. There were so many things in there. And obviously, that like you said for the first Avenger, this also had a spin-off series come because of it, because of Coulson, because he was so popular. And people were so pissed off that he died. But it was like the fun of it, the fun aspect. They actually made it a good laugh as well. The dialogue between
the one lines is just the best film for one liners. I honestly,
the way they took the piss out of Captain America in terms of, because he was so old and he got nothing of pop culture, like knew nothing of what's going on. It was brilliant. It was so perfectly fit in the movie that I just thought so well thought out. And not just that, the action was epic as well. Come on. The fights between them, Thor and Hulk, you know, a god fighting a flipping
The scene when the plane.
Yes.
Yeah. And just the scene in the forest when it's Thor versus Iron Man.
Do it, Stu.
What do you want me to do? Sorry,
the drapes.
Oh, come on,
not mother's drapes or something. When he does Shakespeare on him.
Does mother know thou wearest her drapes? Shakespeare in the park.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful.
It's like, nice I to just... know that all I offer is I'm some kind of fucking performing chimp.
I didn't want to say it, mate, on the pod, but yeah.
You could at least feed me. Don't give me bananas, get me a yogurt or something.
But Rory, yeah, this was Hulk smash as well. We finally got to see where someone said, Hulk, go and fucking smash, and he went fucking ballistic.
I am deducting cool points off this one because of that fucking scene where Hawkeye shoots the arrow that perfectly lands in the computer port. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. I was in the cinema, and me and Ian both went, "Oh, fuck off!" at the same time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Other than that, it's nearly perfect. It's nearly perfect. I scored it in third. I toyed around whether it'd be fourth. It's so hard to not score it top, really, because I remember the way Gags felt when he watched it for the first time. And I just came out of the cinema just beaming. I just like had the best time. And that's the thing with cinema and film, and that's what we love about Marvel. Sometimes you just come out of a film and just had the best time watching it, and that's what you need. I mean, you sometimes need to watch films that make you sad or happy or angry or whatever, but sometimes you just need to watch this film. And yeah, brings back some great emotions, and I just adored it. I think it's just Josh Whedon's just done a great job, and we mentioned Serenity before. If you ever want to go and see something he's produced before, Serenity is such a great film that he did before. And to me, it's a shame that he's the second film. Yeah, it's a shame that it just got all too much for him and the pressure. And I mean, we'll come to
it
pretty soon. Yeah,
he's a known perfectionist, and I think he's basically said he would have loved to have stayed, but he just felt there was a couple of people that were pulling him in different directions, and he wasn't able to get 100% of his vision out. And if it's not 100% what he wants, he doesn't really want to be associated with it. And you can't argue with that. You know, it shows a bit of integrity, doesn't it? It's a lot easier to just go, yeah, fine, whatever, and phone it in. Still make, you know, $500-700 million.
We're moving on to 2013, so not long ago, and Iron Man 3. Again, all pretty similar on this, but I rated this higher than Iron Man 2. For Ben Kingsley alone, as the Mandarin or the fake Mandarin, I just thought was absolutely genius. And I really enjoyed this film, so it was really good fun. I thought the action was ace. And again, it's just more Iron Man, and there's not much more to love than just a solo Iron Man film, really. It's what do you think, Stu? You're the same as me, I think.
Yeah, I said 10th as well. Visually, it was the best Iron Man. I've always been a big, massive nerd for the Iron Man armors. I love the fact that he's got an armor for literally every single occasion. And I love the fact that towards the end, you started getting to see them all. And we got a little bit of a false hope where all the armors are coming in to fight off whatever the hell was going on, or the extremist troops. They had the one that comes in and he lifts up one of those containers. And I started thinking, is that supposed to be the Hulk Buster? But it wasn't.
Big.
His name was Igor and he was just meant for heavy lifting. But I think that was kind of maybe like a quarter of an Easter egg of, look, he's got some big shit out there. He's not just got the underwater armor, the space, the stealth, the Silver Centurion, which is my fucking favorite, where it was silver and red instead of gold and red from the 80s. I love that shit. But, you know, he's got some serious heavy-duty artillery. And unlike you, I actually didn't like the Ben Kingsley bit. Ben Kingsley is phenomenal. But I was massively let down by that little twist when it turns out that he's just a normal guy.
Side note, it was just hilarious.
It was great when he was watching Liverpool beat Chelsea.
Yes, it was.
In the background. That was fucking brilliant. We probably got that more than a lot of people did, because a lot of people probably would have... Oh, why have you got him that in the background? I loved it because it was Agger scoring, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which was ace. And yeah, it was a bit of an anticlimax that that's how they decided to round off the one of the most archetypal Iron Man villains going.
I mean, you guys call me biased towards Iron Man, but I rated both the Captain America movies higher than the two sequels, and I thought they got worse progressively, like normally they do, you know, like a sequel, and I thought from 2 to 3 it got worse. I did like what you said about Mandarin Rory. I did think he was, the twist was fantastic. You don't see it coming, and it was just funny. Really, really funny as well, the way he then turns into this soft
twat. It's just his accent.
Twat,
you know? Kind of, you know, soft
but
twat.
Guy Pearce was let down for me. I, as much as I love the Iron Legion and stuff, you know, the introduction of it all, I thought it was great, but I just thought there was something missing from it. I just really did. And a fun fact for you, actually, while I'm here. The Mandarin has a tattoo on his neck in this movie that's which is Captain America's shield, but it has an anarchist A symbol instead of the star inside the middle of it. So, yeah, there was little nice things like that going on in the movie. That
You've been sorting up, haven't you?
Why not?
You know, you say it was missing something. It was missing a proper villain.
Yeah,
because the Mandarin wasn't the villain, and Guy Pearce is a cracking actor. But Killian was a really crappy,
terrible
character. And then when they got into the CGI, it was a little bit too CG. It was a bit too bendy and a bit unreal.
It wasn't Favreau, was it, this one? I don't know who was tied onto this one.
No, Favreau only did the first two and then he stepped back. And
I think you could tell with the CGI. Yeah, I think you could tell.
It went a little bit too much in the opposite direction, which is sort of understandable, isn't it? Because you are under a lot of pressure to use loads of CG to make it look really extravagant. But the first two Iron Man films, especially the first one, showed you don't need all of that stuff. If the story's good and the villain and the characters are good, you don't need loads of it.
No, you don't. And one last fun fact before you move on. The original post-credit scene was Tony Stark blasting off into space where he meets the Guardians of the Galaxy. But Iron Man was intended to have a cameo in that film as well. But due to Robert Downey Jr.'s announcement that he might hang up his suit, they opted for the scene with Bruce Banner instead, which Robert suggested.
Motherfucker.
I know.
Amazing.
It would have been amazing.
You just ruined my life now, Gags, that never happened.
It was sharp.
Wow. Speaking of ruining lives, I think 2013 is fairly a poor year. You know, we're talking Iron Man 3, and then we're talking the second Thor film, The Dark World.
Jesus.
It ranks 13th, and 13th. If it wasn't for the terrible Hulk film, this would be dead last.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty shit film, actually. I've got to be honest. I really, I try and be positive about the Thor films because I want to like them, but this film doesn't really have any redeeming features for me. Nothing major.
Yes, it does. Chris Hemsworth arms.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good redeem.
For you, perhaps.
And it does. And there was some good Kat Dennings line where she calls Mjolnir, Mjolnir, Mjolnir. That's one of my favourite lines of any Marvel films is Mjolnir, Mjolnir. She's great.
It's not a redeem. Kat Dennings is great, and she's got massive pair of knockers, and you know she's the life of the last.
Trust you to take it down to the base level, and you bastards call me.
Yeah, I just want to say that I don't even remember this movie, and that is the worst thing you can say about
that.
Movie.
Is a bad sign, isn't it?
You know what it is. This is the equivalent. Thor has been sort of treated in the same way Wolverine has. Great character that hasn't been done justice, and both of them now are reliant on the third film in their franchise to really give him a good send-off, because we don't know what's happening with Chris Hemsworth after this. He's another one. He was tied to a really long contract, and he's coming to the end of it. He might have one or two films left. Robert Downey Jr. is done in terms of major films. He's got cameos left, but he's done his major films. Chris Evans, I think, has got one left. So the old guard are getting very close to being swept away. And in the comics, Thor is no longer as we know him. It's now changed to somebody else, which we won't spoil. So, I mean, we could be seeing the end of Chris Hemsworth after Ragnarok.
But I think it would be time for a lot of them. Do you know what I mean? I think he'll still be involved, though, mate.
I'd say more so for the other two, because I'd have to check, but I think he's probably younger than Chris Evans. So I think he's maybe got a few years left in him.
Oh, he's definitely younger than Evans,
It's whether it fits the narrative. It may well be a case of they have to sweep the classic Avengers under the rug and usher in the new, younger completely different Avengers.
I think they'll have to do that.
And it would be a shame if Thor goes everything. Away
yeah.
without having a really good film.
He's still got Ghostbusters, you're fine.
Don't bring up that film on this pod. Jesus Christ. I'll never invite you back.
Can we just start the pod now? Whoever's editing the pod, can you just remove everything that Gags has ever said? And just pretend it was me and Rory. We'll make it work.
I was taking the piss.
Yeah, we'll make it shorter. Right. 2014. So if 2013 was a bit of a poor year, 2014 was an absolute belter.
It was.
It started off with Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I've ranked it fourth, but I was wrestling with myself so much that it could have been top, could have been second, could have been third, but it's such a great film. I mean, me and Stu have always called it that it's almost like an espionage film. It's like a spy thriller in the guise of the MCU. It's not as heavy on the action, but the narrative is great. And it's just got a great villain, and it's just a perfectly well-rounded film, and the relationships in it between Cap and Romanoff is awesome. The introduction of Falcon's good for me. I think it's really good, man. Stu, you agree?
I put it as second. It's been my favourite for the last 2 years. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's perfect. It's probably got, I might be sticking my neck out, but it's probably got the best written story out of all the Marvel films because of how it's good on action, it's hard hitting, it's got incredibly poignant moments. And at the end of the day, when you strip everything away, it's about two lads that have been friends for as long as they can remember. And it's just that struggle between the two. You know, even now, Captain America's weak spot is Bucky. It will always be Bucky, no matter what's going on. As soon as somebody mentions Bucky, as we saw in Civil War, he drops his guard. And, you know, Captain America he's called the First Avenger. You know, he was America's hero. But as soon as you mention the name of his best friend, he just goes to shit. That's how powerful a grip Bucky has got on his life. And
Not just that, though. They showed in Avengers how he felt lonely. He didn't know anything of what people were talking about. The mention of his mate makes him feel like, I've still got somebody from my era here. Someone I can feel at home with, or at least understands me. Do you get what I mean? There is a massive emotional connection to the movie. And I like that. I do. I just found that there were seven movies that I enjoyed more. But like you said, the story, everything about that was spot on. It does connect with you as well. Really good.
Marvel film. I don't feel it feels like a traditional Marvel film compared to the others. It's not as big on the action.
It doesn't feel like a superhero film. Like you were the one that coined the thing and said it's like an espionage film. It's more an action film. It could be, you know, a modern Bourne film or a Mission Impossible, obviously not as cheesy and hand up.
But they use those kind of like Bourne Central European locations, which they had a lot in Civil War. It does feel more Bourne inspired than a lot of other films, really.
And Gags, because you subscribe to that that graphic novel thing for Marvel, so you must have read the Winter Soldier comic.
It's only just come through that one.
Oh, has it? Yeah. Right?
Because
if you read that, I read that and then I went back and rewatched the film and I appreciated it a lot more. It was a very, very good retelling of the story. And that I'm a massive fan. I love it when they can take it frame by frame and just stick it up. And they did a cracking job. There's only one film that keeps it off the top spot for me, and everybody already knows.
We'll get there.
2014, as I said, you know, absolutely cracking year. The follow-up to this was Guardians of the Galaxy, and I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
We all do.
Yeah, I know. I'm slightly disappointed.
Oh, I know one person that doesn't.
Who?
Joseph Connors.
Really? Why?
I don't know. I'm Joey Cousins, for that matter.
What does Joey Cousins like?
No, it was Kay as well.
Joseph Cousins, sorry.
No, God.
No, Kay, really? Kay said he thought that... hang on, did he say it was Doctor Strange was better than Guardians?
That was X-Men. Yeah. You're losing track.
I just want to be angry at Kay. Fuck you, Kay, God damn it.
He's probably going to listen in about 7 months' time anyway.
But yeah, it's fine.
To be honest, sorry. This was This was fantastic. Something, again, never heard of. Had no expectations. This is the killer of it. No expectation movie again.
I had the lowest expectations of it. And I thought it was going to be shit. Yeah, I genuinely did. I looked at the trailers.
You look at a rocket and you go, what the fuck is that?
There's a raccoon, there's a fucking big off tree, and there's a green lady over there. And as much as I love Chris Pratt, I don't think he's going to carry this film.
Oh, he did.
Chris Pratt Batista is what I was talking about. Oh, but he's just the driest humour. Yeah, the lines in this film, you know, something.
It's probably the funniest for me. It's got to be the funniest.
It's got to be the funniest.
It was the funniest.
And that all comes down to Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt, genius casting.
Proper comedy.
Action was good. Again, the dialogue was brilliant. It had
the music.
The soundtrack is the best of any Marvel movie ever.
Amazing.
And
it's like, one of the best soundtracks of any film ever. Yeah. I don't care about genre. It's the perfect soundtrack. I mean, obviously, it's got the kind of harrowing opening scene where he's at his mum's deathbed. But then the second scene when it's the kind of opening and the titles roll, and he starts singing into a bloody lizard on an unbeknown planet. From that moment in, I was just hooked.
Well, hooked on a feeling. I'm still hooked.
You robbed me live.
I'm still hooked on a feeling. I'm still hooked on a feeling with that song. I will play it, you know, all the time. In the car, it's on. It just reminds you know, a song will then just remind you of a movie. Bam. Yeah. That is what this movie did.
And in 10 years, when you hear it, you'll still get those goosebumps and you'll start chuckling, thinking about the lines from it.
Yeah.
And we did it before. We went through when we did the Guardians pod and we talked about all the cast in it. Everyone's perfect in it. There's some small roles for like quite big named actors like Benicio del Toro and
Glenn Close. Peter Serafinowicz gets props for one of the best lines when he's, what an a-hole.
He's got some great lines. He's brilliant in this. And I think Chris Pratt does bring something that I really wasn't expecting. And that's what James Gunn brought to the table. As much as producing a brilliant film, he demanded it was Chris Pratt, and Chris Pratt lost about 4 stone and got into incredible shape because he's never been a lead before and it was quite a risk.
And now
he's getting
some really big movies, Jurassic Park.
Well, after that,
Jurassic just kept going.
Followed. And that's the thing, it's launched his career.
Passengers
and,
coming out soon.
And the guy's great. You know, he's natural. He's such a funny guy, but he's a great lead. He's such a nice guy.
He looks like a nice guy. He just looks like the kind of guy that would, you know, he'd give someone his last dollar, you know, in his pocket to help them out, not to be, you know, oh, look at what he's done, just because he seems like a genuinely just a nice guy. Him and Anna Faris keep themselves out the spotlight.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's there for his fans. He's also, as a lot of the Marvel guys are, he goes and does like charity events and he goes to hospitals and he's wearing his get up. And I've got all the time in the world for people like that, you know, that use their privilege to put a little bit of good and, you know, put some smile on some sick.
Yeah, we don't talk about it a lot, but Marvel do a lot of good and a lot of the actors do what Stu just said. And there's a great video of Downey Jr. Giving a prosthetic limb, didn't he?
He gave an Iron Man inspired prosthetic arm to
a
kid.
It's amazing.
And the
video.
Kid's face. And Chris Evans has done it as well. In fact, Chris Evans and Chris Pratt had a bet last year or the year before. And even though I forget which side won, both of them went in their costumes anyway, because at the end of the day, you know, there was no real winners or losers. So the kids got to meet Captain America and Star-Lord at the same time. And he's just a brilliant guy. But look at his career now. He's gone from the fat lad on Parks and Rec, who was fucking funny. And Andy Dwyer was a brilliant character. And now he's a proper leading man. He's a genuine Hollywood, you know, A-lister.
Yeah. And I think we've all been going crazy over the trailer for Guardians 2.
Oh,
especially Baby Groot.
Unbelievable.
It's going to be great.
Isn't it
it's
one of the longest
awesome.
Ever trailers they've produced, anyone's ever produced for a movie or something? It is fantastic. It sets it up.
It's broken Marvel's record. It's one of the longest, but it's their most viewed trailer, so that means it's also the most anticipated film they've probably done.
Do you know what it is about this film? Just to put it out there, I think this film crosses boundaries for people. I think it brought more people into the MCU because it's it's not what people expected.
No.
It's more of a traditional sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Because it's that a comic, sci-fi, comic, you know,
action, comedy film. It's literally got a bit of everything apart from maybe horror in there.
But people just love it. People just adore this film. And quite right too.
I've got a feeling Mr. Strange is going to have something to do with the crossover.
Oh, yes.
He does. I have a big feeling.
Maybe Ragnarok, but we will see what goes on there. Mm. The next one, again, it's tricky, this film. And you two have scored it higher than me. It's Avengers Age of Ultron 2015. I thought it was a great sequel. But it, for me, it didn't have... Well, it was never going to have the originality of the its first film, you know? But it just didn't have... It was a lot of action. It was heavy on action, but I don't think the script was as strong. And I just, there were some great scenes in it, and I loved the bar scene when they're all just hanging out.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
And Saw's drinking that really strong liquor that he's introduced to Stanley and all the buddies, you know. And
it was
there's some great, great moments in this film, but I just didn't quite get it as much as the
original. Weird
to
say this, right, Rory, but it was a stepping stone movie. This is kind of the precursor to Civil War. This movie sets up... Without this movie, you can't do Civil War. You really can't, because there is so much going on in this film that explains what... why...
There's a lot of tension in this film why it's not as fun to watch, and that needed to be there.
I loved it, though. I absolutely... I'm with Rory. I'm with Stu on this one. Fourth for me.
Yeah.
And obviously, the original Avengers is higher for me than this because of what I said before, but I still think it's... Anything that has like a cast like this together, you know. I mean, we're going to see what Justice League can do later next year, right? Is it next year or the year after?
Next year.
So we can see, you know, you'll get to see how hard it is. Can they nail
you will.
It? You know, because it's not everyone who thinks that making these movies is easy with this many fucking cast members. Believe me, man, it takes some fucking precision to do it and planning. And how many different directors have directed and writers have written their stories or written about them? And for them to get into a big bastard movie together and to do justice to everyone, I'm sorry, man. It's you've got to tip your hat off to them whenever they do it. So,
you do.
Fourth for me.
Yeah, fourth.
Yeah, and there's still some great action as well.
I'm one of the few people that puts this higher than the first Avengers.
You're the only person that puts this higher than me.
Okay, fine. I like to stand alone sometimes. It's better than being sheep, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You bitch. But to me, everything just felt a little bit more connected. It felt like everything was a little bit tighter. But Gags made a really good point. It was a really big stepping stone. You think the things it's introduced, not just the characters, because Quicksilver was okay. I mean, Quicksilver's basically just a shit Flash, let's be honest.
Yes.
But Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch is great.
Wow.
Elizabeth Olsen herself, brilliant. Vision, brilliant.
Wow.
James Spader's portrayal of Ultron.
Ultron was awesome.
Second only to Loki. His comic delivery, you know, this giant, I mean, he's meant to be about 7.5 foot tall, giant hulking robot, probably weighs about 3 metric tons. And yet he's clumsy when he rips off the arms dealer's arm. And,
but this was the first film that showed like vulgar, like not vulgarity, but evilness. Like I think Rory, you said it on the, you know, when we did the pod a year ago, I think one of you, I remember, said that this was the first time they went like, wow, whoa, that's graphic. That really is graphic.
It was a little bit darker and edgier, this film, in fairness. I think Avengers is this kind of family-friendly film. And this had a bit of an edge to it. And I it's hard to score these films. You know, you could score them all so highly. And you know, I still really enjoyed it. But you could tell by what the director came out with afterwards that he wasn't fully happy with what he'd produced. I just thought it could have been better than the Avengers, and I disagree. Agree with you, Stu, that it is better. I just don't see it is. But, you know, that's what makes this pod interesting, I guess, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, isn't it? If we all agreed on things, we wouldn't have a pod because it'd just be really fucking boring. And speaking of things which aren't utterly fucking boring.
No. the next one where you expect jack shit.
Wonderful segue that was, and you just ruined it. I'm wasted here. If I had a trailer, I would be storming off to my trailer, but I don't. So I'm sitting down in my man cave.
With a robe on.
with a Jedi robe on, pouting, stroking the dog, and that is not a euphemism.
For fuck's sake.
No one... Oh, just... Stop. Yeah, we've lost a lot of listeners there, I'm afraid.
Go, Rory, still will, go.
I thank you.
You talk, you
next
talk.
Is Ant-Man 2015. It's the film that I think, other than Guardians, probably surprised us all, because after all the issues with Edgar Wright, and anyone that's listened to me on a pod knows I'm a big fan of Edgar Wright, who did the Cornetto trilogy, Hot Fuzz, Shaun the Dead, etc., was nailed in to produce this and direct this and write, and he wrote the scripts. And he'd been on the Ant-Man, you know, it was just years in the making, this. It's one of the longest films.
Wasn't it something like 2005?
It's something
ungodly like that.
It was something that they said, actually, yeah, this might come off the ground, and it probably fell through a few cracks before the MCU.
It began in April 2006 was when they started official development.
It's insane. And he was on board for what, you know, 8 years, and then he fell out with Disney, and he's still got the writing credits, which he deserves, obviously. But I thought when that happened, and when a director falls out with a film, which is happening all over DCU, literally every DC film going at the minute have got director one or director two or director three on board now.
Yeah, three for The Flash.
And when that happens, it normally spells trouble for a film. And I just was really wary that this film was going to bomb. And it was the first one that was really going to tank. Although Paul Rudd was in it. And I thought, you know, Douglas and Rudd could make it good, but I genuinely was shocked by how good this film was. I absolutely love this film.
I went to watch it for
film.
Kate from Lost.
Well, you know, it's not a bad excuse.
Rory, you and I have both got it down as our fifth.
Yeah.
I was completely surprised. I thought, same as you, it's going to bomb going into it. How... Ant-Man is one of the seminal Avengers. He's always been there. He was a founding member. He's had a bit of a troubled past. Like Iron Man, he's had some controversial storylines involving alcoholism, and there was a really big arc where he was physically abusing his wife, which was, you know, it got really, you know, really deep and really heavy, which a lot of Marvel comics don't do, because, and a lot of comics in general don't do, because you don't want to alienate people by talking about things like that. But at the end of the day, he's a guy you can talk to ants and make himself go really tiny. It's a really, really daft premise. And that's coming from someone who's been a lifetime fan of the Atom. But they did it. You know, even though the Edgar Wright script was diluted a little bit, I think it's still supposed to be about 75% his vision. It was just the, you know, the whipped cream and the cherry on the top that he didn't get to do. But the bulk of it, all the foundation, was his work, because he put so much blood, sweat and tears. He drafted, I think, 3 or 4 scripts before he got it right. So they couldn't have torn it down. If they tried to tear it down, like you, I think my alarm bells would have gone, and I think they would have had to have just scrapped it and said, you know what, we'll bench it and we'll come back in a few years.
Yeah.
But Paul Rudd was brilliant. Michael Douglas was good. That was one of my only concerns, was that it wasn't Hank Pym, is that they were doing the Scott Lang character, because I would rather they started off at the beginning, but then that would have meant a massive leap back in time.
Yeah,
so I can see why
worked.
They did go for the second
they
generation.
Did show little bits of him, you know, Hank Pym.
It was a nice little homage to him, the fact that you still got to see the original Ant-Man.
Yeah. They
it's
made
just
that
a shame
clear,
that it wasn't
and
real.
They really made that clear in the movie that he's the next one. There's already been one. And I think as long as they got that across, that, you know, Paul Rudd isn't the original, he's the next one. I think at least, like, for someone like me who, again, never heard of this guy, Ant-Man, before, I understood there was one in the past. I think
at
that's
least
the clarity.
It's respectful, isn't it? You've got to respect the source material. You can't just come in and shit all over it.
No, and I think they do that a lot, don't they? They do try and stick to it.
Absolutely.
That's the beauty.
Very, very considerate, very much so.
And can we give a quick moment to Michael Pendley?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I was going to say he makes this, and you know when again some of these movies, you try and sell them to people, like for example Nina, and you're like, you know, she's like, Ant-Man, what? I was like, just watch it, and then Michael Pendley is just like, well, you talk about afterwards, because he's just. Brilliant.
And
I can't wait for the next one, because I want to see him.
He's been confirmed for Ant and the Wasp.
Yeah, it's just...
Just awesome. But like it's that narration at the end after the... Obviously, the fight with Falcon is great as well when he goes to the Avengers facility. But that's when he gets introduced to Falcon and just when Michael Peña is doing the whole, and my mate knows this guy and this guy, you know, this guy.
Yeah.
That's what introduces him into the Avengers.
And of course, you get your Stan Lee cameo. You know? So you've got Stan Lee being voiced by Michael Peña.
Yeah, how amazing.
Which is a pretty special moment.
It has a very good cast too. The villain is from House of Cards, I think, as well. He was in House of Cards. So I recognised him immediately. So I thought, ooh, because he was good in that as well. So
he plays a good villain, actually. He's a pretty sick bastard, actually. You know,
well, the only thing I know him from is from The Strain.
Oh, he's in The Strain too.
Yeah, he plays the... he's the lead male character in that. So for me, that was a bit weird seeing him go from...
Wait up, he's the lead in The Strain?
Yeah, he plays F.
Oh my God, he looks so different, doesn't he?
Yeah, because he's got hair and like a bit of stuff.
I didn't even recognise him, I swear to God, I love The Strain.
it's the universal thing of bald people make the best villains.
Oh man, I'm so gutted that I didn't know that. I love it even more now, man, it's going up further.
Nice.
Sorry, there you go.
Rewrite this article. Let's edit it before we get it out.
Love it, Stu. Love it, Stu. I love that, mate. Nice one.
The next film is just...
Oh, Jesus.
Hang on. Just let me loosen my trousers for this. Go on. Away you go.
I thought you've got a drum roll. No, you're just loosening your trousers and opening that bloody robe.
There's a drum roll there, too.
Oh, Jesus. Not with that small thing. Right, 2016. It's the biggest film they've ever produced. It's the best film they've produced for all of us. It is Captain America: Civil War.
Goosebumps! Just talking about this film. We covered it beautifully in the pod. You know,
we did.
What more can we say about this than, like I said to you guys, right? What it does to the cinema goer. If a film can move you, can do something with you, you can enjoy it, you're jumping around laughing your head off, you're excited to see Spider-Man and Iron Man together, you're loving how Bucky and Cap are together now. There's so many little things, little plots, whatever's going on. And then they're at each other's throats. And then the twist at the end, which Stu saw coming, but we didn't. By the way, everybody.
Yeah, but Stu predicts everything, in fairness. Right. So he's bound to get something right.
That had me livid. Fucking livid in the movie. It was like watching Rocky again, and you just wanting Rocky to beat Clubber Lang's face off. Right? It was like that. And I just thought, if a film can do that to you, and it's a fucking comic book movie.
Exactly.
Well done. Like, fucking well done.
It's incredible to get that kind of emotion. And the thing is, what Marvel never does is it never drops its humour from the films. So the scenes we talked about with Bucky and in the VW in the back of the car when they're watching him kiss the girl. Yeah, it's just hilarious. It's Falcon and Bucky's relationship, which is brilliant throughout, because they just kind of hate each other. They're basically rivaling to
be Captain America's
mate. They're
getting their ass kicked by Spider-Man, aren't they, as well?
And that Spider-Man's introduction was just perfect. Black Panther sets up that whole movie, which we're really excited about, and I think it's going to be incredible. And I think he was great in it. And just all the major characters were just brilliant. And they all got enough screen time. I think when we all looked at this, we were just all quite shocked that they all got enough time on screen to make it, you know, them all get enough worthwhile time and then get the action in and then get the narrative in. And despite it not having its de facto villain, I still thought Zemo was great, to be honest. And yeah, Stu, you agree?
Yeah, I do. It's after one viewing, I thought it was my favourite. After the second viewing, it was absolutely nailed on as my favourite. There's just, I don't see how they're possibly going to make a film that's going to take the place of this one. It's one of my favourite films in general, let alone one of my favourite Marvel films. I don't think there's a single thing that could have been improved. I'm actually surprised it's not made more money. I thought it would have absolutely rocketed to, you know, over 2 billion. I thought it was just going to destroy box office records. It's, it's everything it's done so far, everything it sets up for the future. And we're not just talking the next couple of films. We're talking literally the rest of the MCU. I've already made my mark about the, you know, there's going to be the Avengers and the new Avengers, which could mean that Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth go to be replaced by Captain Marvel and Doctor Strange and what have you. And it's going to be very, very profound. It's very, very profound. But you look at all the positives that are coming out of this that you guys have already mentioned. Spider-Man, faultless. A really, really good in-depth look at Falcon, brilliant. Black Panther, brilliant. A lot of people didn't like Zemo, but I, like you, really liked the spin they did. They made it clear they weren't doing Baron Zemo from the comics. He was just going to be Zemo. He was just a guy who was doing this thing. He wasn't supposed to be this maniacal supervillain. He was just a plot point, basically, wasn't he? But yep. I don't think any of the other villains, relatively speaking, have had as profound an impact on the Avengers as he has. And he's got no powers. He's not got a single ability. He's just got in their heads, and he's just completely eroded all of those friendships. And you've now got, you know, 12 months ago, they were fighting side by side. Now half of them are in refuge on the other side of the world because their friends would arrest them on sight. So it's just hard to not love it. It was just perfect.
And it's hats off for the Russo brothers as well. I mean,
yeah.
To bring those kind of characters together, and we talked about it on Avengers and Age of Ultron, but to bring them all together and to give them all that screen time, and to basically, you know, Disney, Marvel have basically trusted them with the keys to the house, to the penthouse, because they're doing the final two, and I couldn't think of a better pair of directors to do it, because they nailed this, and I have no fears. I, you know, complete trust.
You were worried, innit, after you know, Joss Whedon was handling the
two. I was worried in general, because how it's such a big film, you know, and we've seen it with DC that actually the pressure is heavy, because, you know, fans of these genres, you know, are demanding now, and it's brought in so many.
I thought you were
going to
say demented.
No, we're not talking about you.
We're always talking about me.
You know what? You know what, guys? Before you, go on.
Yeah, no. Go for it.
Basically, you're talking about two characters here in this movie that you have defined MCU so far, but then the next movie. I mean, I want you to finish your point, because I was going to do a segue for you, because the next movie defines probably what Stu was pointing at. The next generation of MCU.
Yeah, exactly. And like we said with this, you know, your introduction of Spider-Man and Black Panther is part of what's to come. And you could feel that in you know, they're new, and their stories are yet to be told, and it's exciting and fresh, and that's exactly what you want. But there's the old guard there, and there's still the kind of, you know, there's unfinished business, and this film ends on almost a cliffhanger, in the sense that, you know that the next film is going to be huge, and you just can't wait for it. And I've said that about every Marvel film, that if you come out of a film going, I just want to see the next one, they've got you hooked, because you know no matter what the next one is, you're going to enjoy it. Or
Evans,
you know,
is in Black Panther.
Enjoy aspects of it.
Evans is in Black Panther for me. The way they
Bucky,
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I think they'll all be in there. Everyone who's broken out, everyone who's on Team Cap, will probably be in.
That's amazing. That's a massive movie. Then that becomes humongous. It's like Spider-Man
and
Iron Man.
World. It's going to be jungle. It's going to be a whole new world.
Wow.
And that's the thing. It's going to be different again. And you watch these films, and they do, you know, bring in new elements and new areas. And I'll let you segue into something else they brought in this year, if you wish to, guys.
You kind of just did.
I did it already. Basically, you know, this is this movie. I mean, you could. Doctor Strange is the big one for this year as well. I mean, what did you guys rate it as before we go and talk about it?
I've got it as third.
Wow, that's high. I've got it as seventh, but again, I've only seen it once, and it's,
I've seen it three times.
Jesus Christ. More than Stu, which is rare.
It broke the top five for me. It's a magnificent movie. And the only reason it won't go higher than that is because Iron Man started it for me. It's an emotional connect. And the other three are the ensembles. So
accent is terrible, so I can't get past the accent.
I loved it. I loved it. I thought he was brilliant. He is, and let me put it right now, he is the next big fucking thing for Marvel. This guy is the next, like, Tony Stark for me. The casting, I think Stu will do it better than me in terms of plugging this film, but
yeah.
Fuck me. And the pod's out. The pod's already out when you're listening to this. Go and listen to the Doctor Strange review. But this guy nails it. I did not know nothing about Doctor Strange. I absolutely love this movie.
I think me and Stu would. Yeah.
I watched it in IMAX, Rory. And you know what? 3D IMAX, I felt like the fucking cinema was moving. Because of the way that thing was moving around, I honestly felt like I was in it. If you do not watch this in IMAX, if you've not watched it, go, because it's an experience in itself. I've never seen action like it. People are running upside down, inside out. What the fuck is going on? But it's all believable, and it's all fantastic. So, I mean, I loved it.
I mean, other than the accent, as I said, he is flawless.
You're so nitpicking, Rory.
It's only because when you watch a film and you got a niggle, and I just thought they could have cast him and kept him British, and I think that would have been fine. But still, only because I love Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock. And I love him in anything he's in, really.
He's amazing.
But it's all about his voice and his delivery, and I just thought that was a little bit lost in it. But he is the perfect kind of arrogant, you know, surgeon at the beginning of the film. And so I was on pod with Stu, and I just thought he played that so well, and you saw the, you know, emotional breakdown of him not being able to use his hands and just desperate to fix it because he doesn't know how to not fix things. And I thought Tilda Swinton was just great. I thought the cast were really solid. I thought it was really I just felt like it was one of the most well-rounded films I've seen in a long time. It didn't have to trim any of the fat. You know, there wasn't a part of the film where I was a bit long or that was a bit, you know, a bit boring in that section. None of that. It was a perfectly delivered film. And I'm amazed people, I mean, it is done exceptionally well, and I think people are genuinely excited about what's to come. What excites me most is when you go back to the first Iron Man, you go back to first Captain America, we'll ignore Thor, but you go back to the origins of these films, and you see what they've done going forward. I'm just excited to see what Doctor Strange can do going forward, because he's just starting to get his powers, and he's just starting to hone his powers, and you're just going to see more and more, and he's going to be huge, like you say, Gags, in going forward in phase three, four. We move
it just
on
makes
to.
Me laugh, like when he goes, "Dormammu, I've come to bargain," and he just keeps repeating. I just love it.
Oh,
I just
genius. Thought
it's just such a genius ending to the movie.
It was genius. Fantastic. Stu, I know you've talked a lot on the other pod, but you've got to get in there.
I've got it as my third. Joey and I had a really, really good time with the preview that we did about a month, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the review that we've just released in the last couple of days. I think it's going to be a very profound film in what it's going to bring going forward. It's the first delving into the mystic arts. It's a whole new world for Marvel, which is really going to open up the whole MCU for when Thanos arrives, because they can't beat this godlike figure with just conventional weapons and with science-based
brute strength
and stuff. They need something otherworldly. They're going to need the cosmic powers that they'll get from Captain Marvel, or Miss Marvel, as she will always be to me. And you are going to need the magical side of things, you know, that untapped power that's pretty much limitless. And that's the key thing with this. You know, a lot of these other characters have got limits. You know, Hulk can lift a certain amount. Iron Man can fly this fast, or can shoot a round of whatever, you know, an explosive round that can penetrate through certain material. You know, Doctor Strange is as powerful as his imagination. You know, he will only ever get stronger. And as he starts covering himself with more and more relics like the Eye of Agamotto, he's going to get more and more powerful. He's going to have access to do crazy things. Look at the end of the film. He turns back time. When you start stacking the Infinity Stones together, which is what Thanos is going to be doing, you're really talking some heavy, crazy shit where you can bend space and time across the whole universe throughout history. And it's going to get crazy. And if you've not seen Doctor Strange in 3D, you've got to go and see it in 3D. Yep. It takes on a whole new dimension, no pun intended, because everything just seems a little bit brighter, a little bit more vibrant. And as Gags was saying, you've got things when you've got people running on the ceiling, but then one's running on the wall, and you are actually having to move your head to just sort of check that you're not seeing things. And visually, it's phenomenal. It's got a great story. Tilda Swinton was my favorite part of it, her and Mads Mikkelsen, a great villain, a great hero. Doctor Strange was done brilliantly. And then Mordo was set up really, really well for the future.
Wong's brilliant as
well. Oh,
Wong was
him.
A great little,
love
a great little comedy masterpiece.
I love him. It's I brilliant. Love that he's listening to Beyonce.
Yeah,
I
it's
love
so good.
Listening to Beyonce.
Mate, there's so much is good about that film. And you know what?
It's
there's,
just great.
There's a little bit. I don't know if you guys covered it. I need to listen yet. Sorry, Stu. I haven't listened to the pod yet. But there's a bit at the start. You know when he has the accident? Did you guys pick up on what they were talking about in the car? He's actually giving him like the his computer or whatever is giving him Marvel characters, right?
It's thought that the lady that's been struck by lightning could be Captain Marvel because they've said they're not going to do a comic book origin because it involves bringing in the Kree, and then they'd have to introduce the character of Captain Marvel, who was the original. And I thought that Joey made a cracking point on the pod, which everyone will have listened to because you're just lovely and you do these things. When they mention, I can't remember how they word it, but they mentioned somebody in an experimental flight suit who had like a severe spinal injury.
Yeah,
and I naturally assumed Rhodey.
Yeah,
Joey makes a fantastic point. Think about the timeline. Civil War in the MCU has happened this year or last year. This accident happened about 4 or 5 years ago, so that could be one of the test pilots from Justin Hammer when he was trying to create the Iron Man armor. You know, he was making the man suits, and one of the guys ended up with a a spine injury.
Perhaps, or they might have just screwed up the timeline anyway and had
it,
you know.
It might be Rhodey. It might be Rhodey, yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it was Rhodey immediately, but I did pick up on it. So you can see, like, how you guys have converted me into, like, this fucking buff that's trying to...
The point, man.
I'm picking up on these little things. I was even, like, noting down, like, memorizing the password just in case I was quizzed on anything. You know, Shambhala and all that. I was like, I'm really paying fucking attention to these films now.
That's the thing. These films, I think they require attention. I mean, you can go and watch them as popcorn films and you can get as much out of them as you want to. But the attention to detail in these films is just incredible.
I love
that. And you watch any of these films back and they're just done perfectly. And it's just, that's what we love about them. It's not just the story. It's not just the action. It's that they're all done with care and attention and genuine love. You know, all the actors involved
and Rory,
put
and
so
reckon,
much into them.
I reckon Stu would attest to this. They make them in a way that you can link things together. They leave Easter eggs in there for those
all
that
the time.
Are mental bastards that want to find them will fucking find them. And that's another little bit of respect to the fan or the people that
they respect. They respect their audience. They genuinely do respect their audience, you know.
But there's one that nobody's ever found. James Gunn has said about it, there's an Easter egg that nobody's ever found from the first Guardians film.
He's hinted at
some point. He said he might tell people what it is, and people have had guesses about what it could be.
Nobody's got it.
Yeah, but that's James Gunn. He loves it,
that's
man.
James.
He loves
he's
the
just,
audience.
He's just a bit of a wind-up, mate.
Joey didn't even get it either. Joey don't like the
don't
film, so he ain't going to do it.
Nah, yeah.
Literally nobody in the whole world has got it.
Oh, that's a surprise.
We've covered a lot. It's been, I think it's been a pod to remember. It's our 30th pod. It's our anniversary pod. And like I said, we've come a long way in a year. And, you know, I think we're just happy for anyone that's come on this journey with us. We've got a long way to go yet. You know, there's a lot of other things we want to cover. There's a lot of other guests we want on. There's a lot more we want to write about. The one thing I want to plug is just the article that goes along with this. I don't think people quite, when you're talking comic pods, I think people just think we rock up and just do it. And sometimes that's true, but there are occasions like this one and like a lot of others, in fairness, that we do put quite a lot of background into it. Stu's read a lot of comics. we do get a lot of audience participation. I've read a lot of films, I've watched a lot of films and watched a lot of series and read a lot of things online and paid attention to things like producers and directors and soundtracks and stuff that people don't necessarily think we do in terms of the attention we put into these. And the people that do and the people that appreciate it, we just, yeah, you know, huge love and thanks from us, really, because we get a lot of props for this and the figures are growing and yeah, we love doing it and that's why we do it. And yeah, me and Stu probably just want to thank you guys for listening as you do and supporting us as you do. And that's the same for Gags and Nina and anyone that's come on the pod and anyone that's just, you know, been involved from day one. And we've grown, you know, the numbers of people involved are growing and we just, yeah, genuinely appreciate
yourself,
it.
You've got yourself a little team now, you know, Mr. Lopez, Mr. Connors. You know, yeah. Joey Connors needs to be plugged because he writes so much as well.
Oh, incredible.
He's a big part of your team. You know, you guys are the founders and stuff, but you're growing a little stable over there, which is nice. And you've got like a DC, and Walking Dead specialist in Mr. Lopez as well.
Exactly,
and like, you know, so you've got these little things going. And obviously Kay brings a little bit to it when he's on.
he brings a lot of words. So.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just very, it's such a year's gone by and it's, like I said at the start, so dependable. You know, this pod's coming. And when there's something that's dependable, then you'll see growth because that's what happened with all the other AI pods, the ones that are weekly, the ones that are dependable. If you disappear, your audience will disappear. But if you stick around and you work hard and you go and you graft like you two have done, credit to you, it's going to grow and you're seeing it grow and there's proof of it. You see it, you hear it. And, you know, we just need to pass that on into maybe the writing side. And that will come, takes time.
Yeah,
we need to find other sources because Liverpool fans obviously don't want to read about comics at the moment. You know, they're happy to listen. But what I'm saying is that's the bit that's worked. You know, you can depend on you two to produce this as often as you do and at the right times and when there's hype for something, you're there.
Yeah,
you know,
we do feel like that's the one thing we do tend to get right. We introduce the previews, which I know you started doing, you know, Joe's done on the movie, on the Star Wars side of things, and we worked on those side of things, and we worked on the review of the Comic Con, which I thought was great that we did this year, and we do previews for the year ahead. And yeah, we do genuinely think about what we put out. It's not just, yeah, what's good this week or what's good next week.
But so, behind the scenes, yeah, you have someone like Nina who edits every pod.
Always thankful.
So a massive thanks to her for the hard work as well, but mainly to you two because you guys have smashed it, absolutely smashed this pod and deserve absolutely all the praise that you get once this one's out because without you two, this doesn't get to where it's got to. So fucking well done because I'll tell you what, not many people stick around for a year, mate. I'll be honest with you. And I was doubtful Stu would do it for a year, but he's fucking stuck around. And you know what? Well done. I can't really say much more than
this is
fantastic. And it's a pleasure.
Stu wasn't spoken for like 5 minutes. What the hell's going on?
He's crying. He's crying.
This seems like a really opportune moment to say that Gags has actually recently confirmed that he is going to send us to Comic-Con next year. Private plane.
You're both going in my suitcases.
Spending nice money.
I'll take that.
Yeah,
one day, boys. That's the
everything
that's the
Rory said. Big huge thanks to everyone who supported us. It's been a very good year, and I don't think we expected it to get past about 3 months.
No.
So let's see what we can do in the next 12 months, eh?
Exactly. So yeah, go and check out the article relating to this pod. Give us some more feedback, you know, give us some more shout outs. We really do appreciate them. And then, yeah, come back when we're going to have an awards ceremony next to top off the end of the year with Marco Lopez. And we're really looking forward to that as well. Thanks guys. Tune in again.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.